Well, we're carrying on our series of studies in faith. And the title I've got for this week is Why We Keep Believing. And I don't know about you, but as you read through Hebrews 11, the writer, he sort of, right, well, we've got all these people, we've got Abraham, and we've got Noah, and it's as though he gets to this point, and he's got that excited about these people of faith, that he can't carry on. Because if you notice, at verse 17, he goes back to Abraham. Right? And it's as though he got to verse 13, and he's got that excited about these people, that he just feels he's got to break the thing and tell the people how great these people of faith were. And I think that's exciting. You know, we should get excited about people of great faith. We should get excited about one another. The writer here gets really excited about these people of faith. So we're going to read from Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to read verses 13 to 16. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. I'm going to divide my talk into three parts, and you'll see where it comes from. I want to talk first of all about a people of faith, then about a people of vision, and then about a people of action. So there's three things: faith, vision, and action. Right, and it starts off in this verse 13 that these people died in faith. Who died in faith? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, Noah. All these people died in faith. But they died sustained and controlled by the faith in the people of God. What have they got faith in? Well, first of all, that they would possess Canaan. Now, if you think where Abraham finished, God didn't do that for 500 to 600 years. Now, God didn't let us wait that long for the community centre. Some people might wish that he had. Others wish that he acted quicker. But you see, that is God's timing, not man's. Abraham didn't know when he went into the promised land if he would have it there and then. He didn't know whether it would all come together for him. And his children didn't know that. But they had faith because God had promised that they would have the promised land. And they believed God. So they died in faith. They died in faith. They had faith in the promised Messiah. God had promised that in Abraham's seed, all the nations of the world would be blessed. That was his promise. And they had faith in that. Now, that wasn't accomplished for 2,000 years after it was said. But it was accomplished. It was accomplished. And they died in their faith. And finally, there was going to be a homeland. There was going to be a place where they would be in heaven. And guess what? We're still waiting for it. And I don't mind if I die in faith. Praise God that I won't, but if I do, right, then there is a homeland. There's a place being prepared for me. That's what Jesus promised. Right? And we look forward in faith to that day. We look forward in faith to being there, to see the fulfillment of those promises that he has made to us. We embrace them. We anticipate them. And as we think about all that God has promised us through our work in the centre, through our work in the church, then we look forward to that and we embrace them. We get excited about them. This is what the writer to the Hebrews was. He was getting excited about God's promises. You see, and they were not ashamed to confess that they were pilgrims and strangers and exiles. They were people who lived for the promise, not lived for the here and now. Okay, they dealt with the daily things. Abraham had his problems. Sarah had problems with Abraham. Right? Abraham had problems with Sarah. You know, the daily things of life that they went through caused them problems. But they lifted themselves above that by faith to view what God had promised and rest in God's promises. There's an old song which says, "This world is not my own, I'm just a passing through." Yeah, and we are just passing through. But you know, as we pass, we leave a mark. I can tell when the walkers have walked up my field from one stile to the other. They, especially at this time of the year, they leave a path. They leave a way through the field. And we each one of us is leaving a path in this life that others will see. And that's what the writer here was saying. These people of faith have left a path that we can see and we can follow. Who are your heroes of faith? Who are your heroes of faith? We had faith in God's promises. It's back. Good. Okay. Who are your heroes of faith? When I was a lot younger, back in the early century, I've been sort of my Christian life been raised in the Brethren Church, and the main miracles were people being saved, right? Not much after that, right? And in the 70s. I got to reading books about people. And one of the books that I read, right, or a series of books that I read, about a written Well, they weren't written by him. People had collected part of his sermons and talks and his notes and put them together. So he didn't actually write any books himself, but people produced books from him. Was a gentleman that they call Watchman Nee. And his proper name is Nee Tu Sheng. Nee being his surname and Tu Sheng being his first name. He goes from that he's Chinese. And he was known as Watchman Nee. And he became a Christian in the 1920s. And in Fuzhou in China. And he became a great evangelist. And they collected some of his talks and that together. They had books like The Normal Christian Life, or when it was first published in Hong Kong, it was The Normal Christian Worker. And when we got it to westernize it, it became The Normal Christian Life. But one of the little books was a little book called Sit, Walk, Stand. Sit, Walk, Stand. It was a collection of notes on Ephesians. So we're seated with God in heavenly places. We walk by faith. Thank you for the band this morning. We walk by faith. And we stand on God's promises. Right? And then after Watchman Nee had gone through these things, he gave a little illustration about standing on God's promises. And he must have been a bit of a character, because they normally had a conference at the beginning of the year for a fortnight. And this time he must have upset and trod on a few toes, because they said they didn't want him. There'd been a bit of conflict about his up and go attitude. And so he decided he would have a 15-day mission. And they were going to go to an island off the coast of China and have a 15-day mission there. He says it was an island of 6,000 stoves. So you go around 6,000 homes, right? And there were six of them, well, five and himself. And then he says, very shortly, just before we were going, a young brother named Wu, who had been a dropout type of chappie and had just come to faith, and he was only 16 years old, but he was raring to go, and he wanted to come with them. So Watchman Nee said, well, okay, you can come with us. Right, I thought it would be a good experience for him. And so they got to the island. He got a friend there who he was going to stop with. But when the friend got there, the friend found out he was a Christian. And I was there for preaching. So he said, you're not stopping in my home. Good friends. So they got a place with the chappie who did the medicines and all the things. And he said, he made us very comfortable in his loft with wood and straw. anyway, they started off preaching. I'm trying to remember it correctly. And they broke into two parties and off they went. And they weren't getting... They weren't getting anybody saved, and they were concerned about this. And not the group that Watchman Nee was in, but the other group, were preaching to the people, and the people said, well, we have a God. And every year we worship him. He's the God who looks after us, and for 286 years, when we get to a specific day, we don't have rain, and he blesses us. So little brother Wu pipes up, well, when's that day? And they said, well, it's January the 11th, which was about 2 or 3 days in front. And brother Wu shouts up, well, Our God will send rain on that day. And they said, well, we've never had rain, but God will send rain. Well, if your God sends rain, then your God's the God and not ours. So news of this soon got back to Watchman Nee. And he immediately called a prayer meeting. What to do when you panic? Call a prayer meeting. So he got them together. And the first thing they did was to apologise to God if they'd overstepped the mark. Right? You know, were we being too presumptuous in this? And you imagine that they were they hadn't really prayed for rain at this point, you know. They were getting quite concerned and they were talking one with another. And then Watchman Nee says these things. If I can find it. What should we do? Should we leave now? Before they do it. Up to this point, we had feared to pray for rain. Then, like a flash, there came with the word to me. Where is the God of Elijah? Where is the... Now, you know the story. Elisha had seen Elijah leave. Elijah had parted the River Jordan. Elisha had seen him leave. And his cloak had fallen down. Elisha picks up the cloak and goes back to River Jordan, which by this time had closed up again. And he uses the cloak to strike or touch the water and says, where is the God of Elijah? And the waters part and he crosses. And he says, it came with such clarity and power that I knew it was from God. Confidently I announced to the brothers, I have the answer. The Lord will send rain on the 11th. Now, they thank God for that and everything. And it says, the evening the herbalist made two very pointed observations. Undoubtedly, he said, Tarwang was an effective god. The devil was that with that image. Their faith in him was not groundless. Because they were people of fishermen, and they knew that they would be out to sea on the 15th, and they knew the weather, and read the signs, and therefore they knew when it would be no rain. Said, that evening we went to prayer and prayed for rain. And God suddenly reminded him, where is the God of Elijah? And they apologised to God and said, God, we don't need rain till the 11th. So they went out and they preached and they had 30 converts, right? And that and the work was going on fine. They woke up on the morning of the 11th, to what? Bright sunshine. They went down for breakfast. Still no rain. It says they ate their first bowl of rice. And Watchman Nee said, I think it's time to remind God. Right? So they reminded God, where is the God of Elijah? And he said he had peace in his heart. And after a few moments, there was a few spats of rain. So they ate the second bowl of rice and said, where is the God of Elijah? And suddenly the heavens opened. Right? And he heard later that they'd actually tried to carry the idol out and that the rain was that bad, they were slipping and falling and everything, and they dropped the idol and that, and they couldn't complete the procession with the idol and had to take it into a house. And as soon as they took it into a house, the rain stopped. Then came the announcement that they got the date wrong. It wasn't the 11th. It was 3 days later. And it was going to be in the evening and not the morning. So off they went preaching. More converts. Woke up on the morning of the procession. Still clear sky. Went out. More converts. They came in for tea. And Watchman Lee says, I think it's time to remind God of his promises. So they prayed. A few little spats. Where is the God of Elijah? And down came the rain. He heard afterwards that they tried to carry the idol of out, and the rain was that bad that they fell over and the idol broke. They had to leave the next day. Their mission was finished. But the power of the idol had been broken. But they stood their ground in faith. They believed in God. You gather that that made an impression on me as a young Christian. That God is a miracle working God. So, and Watchman Nee died in faith. He died in faith, believing that he would see a glorious church in China. Right? That there would be many thousands, millions saved. And the church in China today is growing. Why we keep believing? Because we're people of vision. In verse 13, we read, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, having seen them with the eye of faith, how big is your vision? How big is your vision? Where there is Proverbs 29:18, where there is no prophetic vision, the people cast off restraint. Or I tend to remember it in the King James Version. Right? Where there is no vision, the people perish. Where there is no vision, the people are discouraged, they're perishing. Or here we see that they cast off restraint. How big is your vision? Is it just the step into Rugeley Centre? Or is it bigger than that? Is it that small? You see, yes, we can have a vision as a group, and you can be carried along with that in the church overall spectrum of vision. But we need a vision ourselves. We have to own it. Right? It's how big is your vision, not how big is their vision. We need to see things in a different way. When I was at work, I did development and research and tried to improve the processes and the materials in work. And I used to ask for things, and the normal immediate response was, it can't be done. It can't be done. My response was to that, I don't wish to know that. Right? What I need is, how can it be done? What can we do to get it done? notice there that I was owning the solution. It's not what you can do to get it done, it's what we can do to get it done. And generally people would sit down and they'd find ways of getting things done, of bringing to fruition the vision that I saw of improving. And if we have a vision to go forward and to see things, then one of the things we must not do is to go back. Verse 15. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. Our vision always has to be bigger than where we are. Our vision always has to be better than where we are. Remember that recorded from General Booth of the Salvation Army. His daughter came to him once and he was remonstrating with her about what she'd been doing. And she said, "But I'm doing my best." And he just turned around to her and said, "Well, you'd have to do better than your best." Our vision has got, I don't know whether I'd have liked a dad like that, but your vision has got to be greater than where we are. Your vision has got to be better than where we are. The vision looks forward. Don't go back. We need to be people of action. We notice here that in verse 14, we read that they were seeking a homeland, and in verse 16, that is, they desired a better country. They're seeking and desiring something that is better. The enemy of action is contentment. Are you content with how you are? How the church is? It's going along nicely. On a nice flat road. No hills and bumps. Right? Just, I'm comfortable. I'm sitting in my armchair. Right? Enjoying myself. If we get into that state of mind, then we become contented. And we lose our vision. The opposite of contentment is discontent. So we need to be a church of discontents. We need to be people who are discontented with the status quo. Sorry to any status quo fans. Right? Because what's that proverb? A rolling stone. If we're not moving forward, what are we doing? Gathering moss. You're getting greener every day. And very often, once a stone stops rolling forward, guess what? Which way it goes? It rolls back. Right. I want you to be discontented about people growing in Christ. Right? I want to be discontented about people getting saved. Right? Are you discontented that we don't see people getting saved? It said the early church added to the church every 12 months. No, daily. That's the vision. Isn't it? That's the vision. Seeing people added to the church daily. We're not there now. But if we have the vision, then we'll say, well, how do we get there? How do we get to that place? Oh, it can't be done. No, it can't. Let's find out how it can. You know, we don't want 10 on Alpha. We want 20. 130. How are we going to get there? It won't be without its problems. But have a guess. When you get people getting saved and people being brought into the church, they bring problems. They're not all as good as you. Right? Remember at the last church we had a couple saved and they were living together. They weren't married. Right? And after a little while, they came to us and said, "Do you think we're right?" Well, what do you think? See, they already knew the answer. They weren't. Well, can we get married? Yes. And in fact, they went and lived apart for 6 weeks till they got married. Doesn't always happen like that. Right? But people will come in these days bringing a lot of baggage. I'm discontented about people's things. I'm discontented about the use of the gifts of the Spirit. I'm discontented about signs and wonders. I'm discontented about a community church that is not really impacting the community. And unless we're discontented with these things, it won't move forward. Unless our vision is bigger. We should not be satisfied. You can't just sit there. You can't. The story is told in America, in California, about a gentleman who every day used to go and sit in his sun lounger on his front garden, enjoying the sun. He retired and he just sat there and enjoyed it. And he was thinking about these things. And he thought, well, I wonder what it would be like to be just looking down on my neighbourhood. So he had the brilliant idea. And he got some balloons filled with helium and attached them to his sun lounger. And okay, he used to tether a bit and he thought, well, if I just put enough in, I'll just float above the thing and I can look down on my house and my neighbourhood. So he did this and he cut his tethers and up he floated. So he was just above the house and he could see everything. But then he noticed that the house was getting smaller. And he started to go up and up and up and up. It's recorded that he went to 10,000 feet. The local airport, right, spotted something on its radar and had to divert all flights. Because they couldn't identify it or get any response on the radio from it, they phoned the local air force and they scrambled 2 fighter jets to investigate this unidentified object that was at 10,000 feet. The pilot of one of the jets said, "We have found the UFO. please don't switch off. It is a man on a sun lounger." After a time, the helium leaked from the balloons because he hadn't tied it and it floated back to Earth. Obviously, he got some media attention for this. When they asked him why he did it, you know what he said? "Well, you can't just sit there, can you?" I'm not saying we all fly to 10,000 feet. But are we just sitting there? My mind goes to Nehemiah. He didn't see a pile of rubble in the walls. He saw the walls built. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, we read about the people who helped building the walls. I forgot I've got. I'm near the end. Nehemiah chapter 3 verse 20 says, records this. After Baruch, the son of Zabai, earnestly repaired the other pieces from the turning of the wall unto the door of the house. Now you see, earnestly, he worked at it. He didn't look at what the size of the stones were. He knew those stones had got to be put together, and so he did it. In verse 12 we read, and next to him repaired Shalom, the son of Halasheh, the ruler of half part of Jerusalem, he and his daughters. Now normally building walls was men's work. Right? But the whole of the community, his daughters, were involved in it, in building that wall. They caught the vision of what it could be. But in verse 5 we read these, and next to them the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. They were too far above it to be involved. But the people had a mind to work, we record in chapter 4, verse 6. We're building for God. We're standing by faith on the promises of God. We're working as people of action, as people who are discontented with the status quo, who are discontented with people not being saved, we're discontented. Yeah. If you're working on the food bank, right? How many people have been saved? People coming through the centre. How many people have been saved? Huh? Working with the children. How many people have been saved? So you've got to have this extra vision, extra desire, extra thing. Paul could have sat in the church at Antioch and been quite happy. He was a leader. He was known as a prophet. But the others decided they were going to get rid of him. They were going to send him off. Now, I don't know whether Paul was very happy about that to start with. I don't know whether he caught the vision, but he certainly, the church had. I'm sure they appreciated Paul being at the church. But their vision was a bigger one. They saw the potential. They were discontented. And they sent them out. Finally, in verse 13 we read, they were not ashamed to be strangers and exiles. I'm not ashamed to be a Christian. I'm not ashamed to be stand up and be counted. I'm not ashamed to hold things lightly. And in verse 16, God is not ashamed to be called our God. We should not be ashamed of who we are in Christ. We should not be ashamed that we are the people of God. And you know, we're going to come under increasing pressure. People will want to make us ashamed for what we stand in. It's only been a case just last couple of days, where a church had been supporting, I think it was a minister somewhere, a gay pride rights. And a minister had spoken out about it and said, that's not in line with scripture. You know, we love the people, but we shouldn't be supporting what they do. And he's been vilified. He's had nasty emails sent to him. He's been called everything. Right? But he was not ashamed to stand for what is right. And we should not be ashamed. Yes, we need to be people of faith to stand on God's promises. We need to be people of vision, right? To have a vision, not to go back, to be discontent. People of action. And God will bless his work. I wonder how you are today. Are you discontented with how you are? Are you discontented? Perhaps it's your own personal level of where you are with God. Perhaps it's through illness that you feel discontented. Perhaps it's through relationships that you feel discontented. Well, God is a God that works with the discontents. He works into our lives and into our things. I wonder if the band could come back, and I don't know whether you've got a closing song or can we sing again? I walk by faith. Because I had that on my mind last night. And guess what? He chose it. Right? I walk by faith. I walk by faith. And I want God to stir us. God to move upon us. Right? So that we might have faith.
Let's stand, shall we?
I walk by faith, each step by faith, to live by faith.
I put my trust in you.
I walk by faith, each step by faith, to live by faith. I put my trust in you. Every step I take is a step of faith. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. And every prayer I make is a prayer of faith. That if my God is for me, then who can stand against me? I walk by faith, each step by faith, to live by faith. I put my trust in you. I walk by faith, each step by faith, to live by faith. I put my trust in you. And every step I take is a step of faith. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. Every prayer I make is a prayer of faith. And if my God is for me, then who can stand against me? I walk
by faith,
each step,
by faith,
to live by faith.
I put my trust in you.
One more time, I live.
I walk by faith,
each step,
by faith,
to live
by faith.
I put my trust in you.